Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, bright and early on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and where all the latest Winnipeg Jets news resides, IllegalCurve.com. Dave Minuk, the morning papers are already up on the site, so get set for this afternoon's Jets-Capitals matchup at MTS Center as the Jets look to build on their victory from Wednesday evening versus the Toronto Maple Leafs with a step up in weight class against a very good Metropolitan Division-leading Washington Capitals team. I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. We'll get into the Winnipeg Jets and the Washington Capitals very quickly. Fortunately, hate to see this start so early in the morning. A lot of tension in the room between Richard and Ezra, bright and early here, 8 a.m. There's a little bit of a snubbing last night when it came to a UND hockey game. And before we get to that, Ezra, you were at the wrestling last night that Troy was participating in. Did anybody hit you with a steel chair as I put a bounty on your head for $50?
Yeah, by the way, good morning. And I can't believe you actually would put a bounty on the head of your friend and fellow member of Illegal Curve. But no, I can say that nobody hit me with a steel chair. But we got to give a shout out to, as you mentioned, Troy Westwood of TSN 1290, because he won his tag team match with the hotshot Danny Duggan, and he did use his finishing move, the convert. So it was an excellent match.
Well, Ezra, tell the people what the convert consisted of. You know, in terms of how did he disable his opponents by using the convert? Like, what was the convert?
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Troy Westwood has the record for converts in the CFL.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody does know that, but some people
don't. I
didn't
know that.
Really?
I don't keep track of the CFL's the stats lines, but I'm happy to hear that.
Yes. Anyway, so what is the convert in terms of a wrestling finishing
move? We'll get to you in a second. Just hold on a second. We're talking about
I'm surprised Drew gave away a bounty chocolate bar.
No, a $50. It wasn't a chocolate bar. I wouldn't give away. I'd give away $50. I wouldn't give away a chocolate bar.
That's true.
There's a difference in my priorities here.
Anyways, you're not getting that $50 because
nobody hit you with a chair.
No one's going to mess with the posse of Remus Hustler, Joel Marcoux, and I. So hold on a second. But his finishing move, just quickly, was a nice kick, a full winded up kick to the nether regions.
Ooh.
And the outlaw Adam Knight and Shane Madison, the tag team, got that, and they won the match. So it was awesome to see Troy. There was a bunch of us from the station cheering him on. There was a battle royale, a 50-man battle royale, at the end of the night at Holy Cross Gymnasium. So it was a great event.
Yeah.
And it was lots of fun to be part of it.
Surprised to hear that a kick to the nether regions wouldn't result in a disqualification, but obviously the ref must have been distracted. Now on to Richard.
Who was the ref?
I think Ezra was the ref.
I don't know what the guy's name was, but...
Now on to Richard. Richard, you went to the UND game last night.
I did.
You saw Tucker Poolman.
With the hardest working man in Illegal Curve, Dave Minuk.
Yeah, the hardest working man in Winnipeg media, Dave Minuk. Now, talk about Tucker Poolman, first of all. Jets prospect, you saw him play last night. Obviously, a snapshot, only having seen him last night. You don't see him on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Tucker Poolman's game for the... North Dakota, what are they now? The Fighting Hawks?
Fighting Hawks. Oh, the fans are not particularly happy about the name change.
No, the students. I understand that they boo every time they say the Fighting Hawks.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
This is more so the student section than anything. Drew, he's a pretty impressive prospect. Big guy. Uses his size really well. You have to like that. Pretty mobile. Plays some power play times. Got a big shot. Strong. Pretty good sense for the game. I was pretty impressed. He's playing on... So the second pairing right now and second unit, but on the power play. But there's a lot of good things to like about him, and I think he looks at home kind of on defense. And I know that there's been some transition time. His dad, of course, is a trainer on the team, so he is in terrific shape apparently and very strong. But in terms of his role in the game, I thought he played a solid game, and he looks like a guy who would project out. There's certain guys who have tougher time projecting out. He'd be a guy you would take the next step. It's just a matter of when, I think.
Now, Ezra, you would, how did you feel about not being invited to attend the hockey game last night with Dave and Richard?
Well, I mean, I felt a little bit hurt because Richie and I have been going to UND games for the last 4 or 5 years.
Is this Dr. Phil?
And it's the Legal Curve Psychology Hour.
And I didn't even get an invite. I probably wouldn't have gone because I was supporting my boy Westy last night.
Yeah, of course.
At Rumble to Remember.
And you already gone to a game this year.
Well, I would have maybe gone to another game, but I you know.
It's okay.
Just saying, I was a little bit hurt.
It's okay. Richard and Dave, we have a new wrestling match we can now announce. Richard and Dave versus me and Ezra. And then about halfway through the match, I'm going to hit Ezra with a steel chair and join Richard and Dave.
Better be a steel cage match.
Anyways, let's get on to the Jets and the Capitals. A key weekend for the Winnipeg Jets. Two games tonight, today against the Washington Capitals. Tomorrow afternoon against the Chicago Blackhawks. And sure, it's a little bit early to be looking at playoff positioning. But if the Winnipeg Jets can take care of business this weekend, if you can win both of these very difficult games, you've put yourself right back into a playoff spot. You'd be tied for fifth in the Western Conference, in the Central Division, pardon me, with the Chicago Blackhawks. You got to start today against the Capitals. We'll preview the Blackhawks a little bit later on. But what do you want to see out of the Jets today? You just saw the Capitals about, you know, what, 10 days ago, give or take? And, you know, not a great performance by the Jets. They were in it until the third period, but it wasn't a performance that you think would translate into a victory the way they were playing. What do you want to see from the Jets today, Richard, against the Washington Capitals?
I want to see them stay out of the box. I think, first and foremost, that's what you need to do. You can't be going into the penalty box against this Washington Capitals squad because they're dangerous on the power play. You saw last time Ovechkin's power play goal, and he had a lot of chances, and Michael Hutchinson made some nice saves in that game. I think overall the Capitals are a difficult team to play against because, as we said on Thursday's show, they can beat you in different ways, speed, size, skill, grit, good goaltending. So there's a lot of things that they can do that are difficult. But I'd say one of the keys would be to get Myers and Enstrom out against the Ovechkin line. I thought they played predominantly against that line in Washington. The Jets were able to get that matchup. And I thought, aside from a player too, they did a tremendous job of keeping them off the score sheet at even strength. They did a nice job of taking away space, using speed, using the reach. More so Myers in the reach, but although Enstrom has a long stick, that is the most important thing to me is how do you match up against that? How do you match up against that line, and how do you defend that line? Obviously, forwards be an issue as well. But then you get to the next one, and it's a Kuznetsov-Ezzy. You know, obviously, it's such a dangerous player, putting up a great year.
Mm-hmm. Over a point a game right now.
With compliments to guys like Marcus Johansson and Justin Williams, to guys who can do different things. How do the Jets' other pairings defend? So, you know, there are other keys, of course, to the game, but those are two things I'll be watching for.
Ezzy, how about you? You know, piggybacking on Richard's keys to the game were there. What do you see as the Jets, you know, the Jets need to win this one or two areas of the game, and that'll help propel them to victory today against the Washington Capitals?
Yeah, Drew, and to Richie's point, the last game against the Washington Capitals, the Jets were penalized quite a bit, and the Capitals hurt them. The Capitals have a top power play in the NHL, and for that matter, they have one of the top penalty kills in the NHL. They're really at the top of every category right now, guys, whether it's shots against whatever.
Yeah,
and I know the Rangers and Habs right now are ahead of them in the standings, but they're right up there with those two teams in the Eastern Conference. So Richie's absolutely right. And you look at the makeup
Washington
of the
Washington's tied with the Rangers now, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, so they are tied. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that happens.
After the Capitals defeated, there was a battle really of you know, top Eastern Conference teams in Montreal on Thursday night, which the Capitals won by a 3-2 margin, and that put them tied with the Rangers in terms of points. The Caps do have three games in hand, so you can pretty much say that they are in the driver's seat in that Metropolitan Division thus far in this year.
Just as an aside, with the injury to Derek Stepan in New York and with the injury to Carey Price and Brendan Gallagher, I mean, it's looking pretty good for the Washington Capitals right now. But back to the forward lines there, and
yes,
you know, Richie mentioned Evgeny Kuznetsov, who's leading the team in scoring right now. The biggest difference, as we know, between last year's team and this year's team is the right side. They went out and they got TJ Oshie, they went out and they got Justin Williams, and they moved Burakovsky off the second line to the third line now, and they've really spread out their offense. So it's a dangerous team, and they might have the best fourth line in the NHL with Brooks Like, Michael Latta, and Tom Wilson. So this is a team that's extremely dangerous, very good defensively. Braden Holtby is going to start this afternoon again. He's been on fire. Mm-hmm. He starts 90% of the games for the Caps. We knew he was going to play a lot. He played 73 games, the most in the NHL. So to Richie's point, I mean, this is a team that you have to control their speed. For me, another key, too, is winning this game at 5-on-5. Yeah. And for the Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd line to outplay the top line of the Washington Capitals, I thought a week and a half ago the Ovechkin-Backstrom line was clearly a better line. Not to say that Ladd, Little, Wheeler weren't good in that game. And, hey, coming off of the Toronto game, they were excellent in that game. And that's not to take anything away from Mark Scheifele or Drew Stafford, because that line was obviously the line that carried the offense, with Scheifele and Stafford mm-hmm. each getting mm-hmm. 3 points, right? So it's going to be a tough test. And as you mentioned, with Chicago coming up on the road, plus the fact that you've got another back-to-back coming up next weekend at home against Columbus and then again against Chicago.
Thursday, Friday, that's
right. You
got
two games coming up against the defending Stanley Cup champions, guys. And Washington is a dangerous game, don't get me wrong, and you can't overlook Washington. But those two games against Chicago, to me, are also extremely important as far as how the Jets are going to set the tone for the rest of the month, because they have to make up a lot of ground because of the way they played in November. So, you know, it's going to be a tough test. They've got to play with the same type of structure. I thought Ben Chiarot coming in the last game was very solid. I thought Chiarot and Byfuglien were very solid together. Mm-hmm. That pair is going to be very important because, as we talked about, it's not just about Enstrom and Myers and Stewart and Trouba. It's the entire group of defensemen is going to have to be solid, because this Capitals team can hurt you from many different types of areas, special teams, 5-on-5, you know. So Braden Holtby might even score a goal tonight, Drew. Who knows?
Brooks Orpik still out of the lineup for the Washington Capitals, as he has been for the last couple of weeks. He didn't play when the Jets played in Washington a couple weeks ago. And Marcus Johansson, he's a game-time decision after he banged something up against Montreal. He tried to practice yesterday here in Winnipeg with the Capitals, left practice early, and according to head coach Barry Trotz, he's a game-time decision. We know that Orpik's been out of the lineup, so that's no surprise. Mm-hmm. If they lose Johansson, what's the impact on that on the Capitals if Johansson's out of the lineup?
Well, you know, Drew, I mean, it hurts in the sense that, you know, he's going to play on your second unit, and so your second line. He's a creative player. He can make plays. Mm-hmm. You know, that's important. I think he adds a different element than Justin Williams on the other wing. Plays on your first power play as well. So that's not an insignificant loss by any means. Not something that's insurmountable, but not something that's insignificant.
It seems like to me the loss of him on the power play, where he's the net front presence, is almost you know, more significant than losing him on the second line left wing. But again, if the Jets take penalties,
Burakovsky's capable of taking his spot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Jets still can't take penalties because they're going to get, you know, Johansson's not the driver of the power play,
he's
an important cog, but he is probably more replaceable than an Ovechkin or a Backstrom.
Right, and the Capitals are going to always want to set up Alexander Ovechkin to the right of Connor Hellebuyck. He always likes to sit up there the left side, right? And you know that they're just going to be feeding him. That's even more reason not to take penalties. And the Jets were really good about that. We talked about that in the last game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. They took a few penalties in the first period, but aside from that, they stayed out of the penalty box. And I thought that was very telling, Richie, because against a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, team that they obviously beat handily, you knew that if you took a couple penalties there when the game was a one-goal game, that could have changed the outlook of the game. So I thought that was very impressive. And they've done a lot better of a job. We got to give them credit, because everybody at the station here has been very hard on the Jets for the amount of penalties they've taken, and rightly so, because they're the most penalized team in the league, or one of the most penalized teams in the league. So you got to give them credit, too, when they show discipline and structure. And they did that against Toronto.
One thing you have to be aware of is that against Toronto, they didn't have to defend a lot. And they're going to be, you know, you talked about the talent and the depth that they have. You're going to be defending all four lines at some points in these games. And the Leafs didn't make you defend much.
Yeah.
And for sustained periods of time, it's hard to not take penalties when you're doing that.
But
as he's right, I mean, it's credit. You want to start somewhere. You want to, and you know, and doing a better job of that, it's very important to do that. So not take penalties. I totally hear that. But when you're defending, it's harder as well.
If you're Paul Maurice, are you pointing out to the guys how key this weekend is? You know, that, as I mentioned off the top, you win both these games.
I think, you know, you're Paul Maurice, most games are the same.
Yeah.
I don't think you're overstating, especially this early in the season. You know, you're overstating it more than you're not. I just don't think...
You got to take it one game at a time.
It's such a grind.
Yeah,
a grind. I know it's a cliche, but it's such a grind that these guys can't. You can't say, oh, these two games, because if they lose, what does he say next time he goes in the room?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think
the Jets still lead the league in minor penalties, by the way.
Do you think the players know? You think the players know that, you know, you take care of business this weekend and, you know, for all for as bad as your November was?
You take care of business this weekend. You still got to take care of business all the time. We've talked about the 2-1 basically every three-game set.
I know, but you take care of business this weekend and you're back into a playoff spot and how bad your November was is almost behind you at that point in time.
Sure. And then you stumble against Columbus and it's gone.
Of course. I know that it's
you need to play a good month. Like, he's not going to let them wrestle. You have to play a good month to make up for the terrible month you just had. That's what you got to do. So you got to have a December that you perform exceptionally well. And you probably have to play it close to that clip the rest of the way.
It started well on Wednesday night against the Leafs. The Jets hope that it'll continue the same today against the Washington Capitals. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the latest about Travis Hamonic and the rumors that Dustin Byfuglien may be involved. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. And if you're looking for a breakfast place, bright and early this Saturday morning, check out Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You
could have your birthday there. Yeah, I misspoke. But could you have an Illegal Curve sandwich for breakfast, you think? Is that a breakfast food also? It's got salami on it.
I think so, in the sense that it'll fill you up for at least 6 or 7 hours.
Well, they say breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
And Richie, the bread is toasted, too.
Toast is very breakfasty.
That's true.
Yep.
Salami, very breakfasty. Chicken schnitzel, I suppose, in some cultures might be very breakfasty.
It's a heavy breakfast, though. Yeah. Like, if you're getting up like to go to work and you're pounding an Illegal Curve sandwich, like...
You do it.
Oh, I've done it before.
Yeah, well, you're a machine, though.
I've done a lot of things, Drew.
Yeah, and you're not proud of a lot of them. A lot of them you're not that proud of. Anyways, welcome back to the program. Elliot Friedman, in his 30 Thoughts column, had a number of different points about Dustin Byfuglien.
What happens if Elliot has like 40 thoughts?
Sometimes he goes long, I think.
I feel like he only really has 15 and stretches them out to 30. Like, a few of those thoughts are cutting, you know, like our one thought that he's made into two.
Yeah. I understand. It could be just miscellaneous thoughts, and then there's, you know, not an exact number. Anyways, in his article, he talks about the Jets potentially offering Dustin Byfuglien to the New York Islanders in an exchange for Travis Hamonic. I don't think there's anybody in this room who's surprised that the Islanders turned that down.
No.
No? It's just the nature. I mean, no, you know, disregard to Byfuglien, of course, just the nature of his current status as a pending unrestricted free agent. That's not a trade that... straight up that Garth Snow is going to be able to make. And here's Elliot, I'll read the exact quote. Winnipeg's Dustin Byfuglien Travis Hamonic attempt doesn't necessarily mean Byfuglien is, quote, on the block. The number one thing to remember here is we don't know the exact timing. Hamonic's request was made months before it was reported. It's unlikely such an offer came last week, for example. Walk it through. Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff prefers not to trade Tyler Myers or Jacob Trouba. He probably guesses New York counterpart Garth Snow isn't taking Byfuglien, a pending free agent for Hamonic. But you try anyway. And who knows what else may have been part of this deal, if anything. Byfuglien would stay in Manitoba if the right deal is there, but my sense is it needs more term than the Jets are currently willing to give.
So this is all nothing we didn't know.
That's
just the truth. Like, Elliot Friedman's writing nothing there that we didn't know. Sure, the Jets are offering a pending UFA for a guy locked in at a cheap contract for a few more years who can play in your top four and play on the right side. They're not willing to offer the guys who anybody would want in exchange for that, and the Islanders would want to contend in an Eastern Conference that they think they have a realistic chance of winning in. And Byfuglien wants more than 3 years on a deal in his probably last big contract. That's not really news. I mean, everything there is completely logical. Except for the Jets thinking that they're going to get one of Myers or they're going to get a Hamonic for not include Myers or Trouba, which I'm sure they actually don't think, because Kevin Cheveldayoff is not stupid.
Yeah.
So he would know that that's what you're going to have to give up. He knows he doesn't want to give it up, allegedly. And there you go. So that's not going to happen.
We talked about this exact scenario 2 weeks ago. So I agree with Rich. I'm not saying that Elliot isn't doing his due diligence in reporting. And the news, the real news here is that there looks like there was an offer of Dustin Byfuglien that we didn't have confirmed before. But as far as Trouba and Myers go, as Richie mentioned, we went over this. And we said that most likely it wasn't a fit because look at the situation is difficult for Garth Snow, right? Rich mentioned Travis Hamonic has 4 years after this year at $3.8 million. An excellent cap hit for a shutdown defenseman of his quality. I would say probably a top 20 shutdown defenseman in the NHL. Hamonic has the full package. He can hit, he can shoot, he can skate. I mean,
yeah, he can't create a ton of offense.
But even though he might not be Paul Coffey, he's got the ability to chip in offensively, 33 points
last year, right?
That's fair. So, I mean, exactly. He's not going to be mistaken, Richie, for Erik Karlsson, but he's a really good defenseman, right? And a lot of teams want him. And it looks like the four Western Canadian teams are his preferred destinations, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as Trouba and Myers go, we said this. Tyler Myers was just acquired by the Jets last year. And I think he's been their best defenseman this year. I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff wants to trade Tyler Myers right now. As far as Jacob Trouba goes, Jacob Trouba is a pending RFA who has the potential to be a top 10 defenseman in the NHL. So are you trading Jacob Trouba and his potential for Travis Hamonic? And don't get me wrong, I would love it if the Jets could get Travis Hamonic, but I don't think that one of those three defensemen, Trouba, Myers, or Byfuglien, is going to be the one that is traded to the Islanders to get Hamonic. I just don't see it happening. I know everybody here, Drew, wants it to happen because Travis Hamonic is a hometown boy, St. Malo, Manitoba, but it's not easy to make a player-for-player trade. I think if Travis Hamonic ends up as a Winnipeg Jet, it's going to involve more pieces. It's going to involve draft picks. It's going to involve prospects. The Jets do have a lot of good prospects.
But everything we've heard, and I don't disagree with you, Ezzy, but everything we've heard indicates that Hamonic's not going anywhere this season unless the Islanders can get back a player who can go right into their lineup. And if the Jets aren't willing to...
I mean, it could be a three-way trade.
When's the last time we saw a three-way trade in the NHL?
But if the Jets aren't trading any of those players...
Is it a non-starter then?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you could do a three-way deal, say, for an Eberle, include Eberle, and make put all these parts together. But if you're not trading... I guess my point is, if you're not trading one of those three guys, Drew, why are you acquiring him? Where is he going to play?
Well, that's why I think you're not. I mean, you can't have four... excellent right side defenseman. You can't have, I think you already have, with three, pretty good right side defensemen, you already have too many. So,
remember, you're acquiring him to basically, certainly through the rest of his contract, not trade him. Not that you acquire a player to trade him, but you know what I mean? Like, he's on the team because he wants to play here, and that's the reason you're kind of acquiring him.
And he's under contract for four more years after this year.
Yeah, and he's a good player, obviously, is the reason you're acquiring him. But the idea is, you're acquiring the guy to play close to home. So you want him to be part of your squad. So you're building the team now around him and other guys. Like, it just doesn't piece together.
So
it still makes the most sense. To me, I think Minnesota's that wild card as one. I don't know. Well, that's the wild card as one. And Edmonton makes the most sense.
But does Edmonton have the rights, a defenseman to give back?
Well, I mean, that's why
they don't.
Minnesota... That's why I told you weeks ago, Minnesota probably.
Right.
I mean, if Edmonton wants to do a three-way deal with somebody, get creative.
Well, let me interrupt there. More from the article. Wouldn't be surprised if Edmonton, the Islanders, and St. Louis talked to see if there was a three-way match. Not sure how far it went, but it sounds like the window's closed. It seems like with this trade, it almost has to be but if the Jets aren't willing to trade Trouba straight up.
See, I'm thinking that trade, if I just want to speculate, because why not? Just, certainly nothing that we know as hard fact.
Mm-hmm.
Speculate that St. Louis deal probably included something about Kevin Shattenkirk as a right side D on St. Louis. Colton Parayko's come up, played very well.
Mm-hmm.
They have Schmaltz in the system. Obviously, Pietrangelo plays a lot of minutes. St. Louis probably was looking to get maybe a little bit more skill up front, game-breaking skill, and possibly there's a match there with all those teams, but that's just what I'm speculating as to what that was.
Sure. You saw Schmaltz play last night at UND,
Different,
right?
That's his brother.
Is that his brother? Okay, I didn't know which. But I couldn't remember
I saw Schmaltz play in town here at the Chicago Wolves.
Oh, so, okay.
I don't have time to say about him yet. But guys that they have in the system, right?
Sure. So. It just seems like I don't know how this trade happens here, how Hamonic gets to Winnipeg, unless Kevin Cheveldayoff is willing to give up one of... really, Trouba or Myers. I don't foresee it happening, and I don't know why you would make that trade, why you would bring Hamonic here, unless you were giving up one of your right side defensemen at the same time. It seems like it's sort of, if you're not willing to start with those, one of those guys, it's a non-starter of a trade discussion.
Well, I mean, you could conceivably trade Byfuglien and then use those pieces to bring in Hamonic. you could do something like that. But again, that's two separate deals to me. Three-way is going to be hard to it's hard enough to make a two-team deal. So three-team would be especially difficult.
Yeah.
But if you trade Buff, then you're changing the way you're doing. I mean, you're trading Buff, and I don't see them doing this all midstream. I think you're trading Bufflin if you're out of it.
I agree with you that you are, unless you re-sign him, you're trading to Bufflin if you're out of it, you know, come the trade deadline.
Yeah.
That was sort of, you know, as I was piecing it together, I'm thinking, well, you know, if the Jets fall out of the playoff picture, and we won't know that for another, the problem is nobody really ever falls that far out of the playoff
picture. That's the thing, Drew, and if you're trading Bufflin, you're likely trading him to a team that's contending. If they're contending, they're not giving you ready-made players, and if they're not giving you ready-made players, the ready-made players can't be traded to New York eventually for a player who can play now in Hamonic. These are the things, right? So there's a lot of limitations. Believe me, without Ezzie, without the limitations of Hamonic, and I, you know, personal reasons, we're not going to get into those, but without the limitations on where to play, it's hard enough to make a deal anyways.
Right, and this is trying to trade a really good player who has term to a specific number of teams. And I think it's really important to note what time of year we're in here in December, and the fact, as you just mentioned, aside from the Edmonton Oilers who have fallen out of the Western Conference playoff picture, the Winnipeg Jets...
They're only 5 points out of a
playoff spot. Well, they're 5 points, but...
That's how bad the Pacific Division is.
Right, and I'd be shocked if the Edmonton Oilers are able to turn it around just because of the way they've played. I mean, the other night against Toronto, for example, even though they won last night. But a team like the Winnipeg Jets, they're still fighting on a daily basis, nightly basis. I guess today's daily. But they're fighting to get back into a playoff spot. And they're going to be fighting right up until the trade deadline. So I think it's a tough time of year as well to make a trade. You typically see a lot of trades in the first month of the season and then the last month before the trade deadline. Well, not in December when you're still not sure if you're a seller or a buyer, right? And I'm not specifically just talking about the Winnipeg Jets, but you can throw the Flames in there. I mean, the Wild, again, even though be shocked if they didn't make the playoffs. Same situation. They're fighting tooth and nail with the Jets for that last playoff spot in the Central Division, right? The Blues and the Stars, you know, they're further ahead in the Central Division. But right now, I don't know if there's been a trade that's come close to happening, Drew. I think there's a lot of teams that are looking at Travis Hamonic and they're saying, I'll take Travis Hamonic on my team any day of the week. But they're saying, okay, well, what do we have to give up? Dougie Hamilton, for example, in Calgary. I don't think that's a fit at all. They just traded for Dougie Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily know, actually, that the Islanders would consider Dougie Hamilton of equal value to Hamonic. I think Travis Hamonic's a better defenseman.
Different players, right? Different players. Yep. Hamonic won't give you the offense that Hamilton gives you, but it'll give you more grit than Hamilton gives you. Probably, yeah. You know, depending on if you want him in a shutdown role or not, yeah, there's different qualities.
If you've watched Hamonic play, and I know you have, Richie.
They can both shoot.
You watch him over the years with the New York Islanders. He gets the tough matchups.
Yep.
He's a good defenseman. I really like him. And that's why I said I personally would love to see Hamonic in a Jets jersey. It'll just be tough, I think. And I think to just look at Myers and Trouba to think that it's just going to be a one-for-one trade, I think you have to look a little bit outside the box. If it's going to happen, it's going to involve other pieces. Maybe, as you mentioned, Drew, another team.
And before we go to break, Drew, I said this last week, and I'll continue to say it. The Jets' job, Kevin Cheveldayoff's job, and he's brought this upon himself, is made a lot more difficult if they stay in the race than if they fall out of it.
Mm-hmm. And every game that goes by, there's less reason for Andrew Ladd or Dustin Bufflin to sign a contract extension before hitting July 1st.
Well, less reason for them to sign a contract extension, that's not exactly what they want.
Yes, very true. Of course, if it's what they want, then they're happy to do it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to tomorrow afternoon's Jets Blackhawks game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Jets keep it in. Perreault right side point again. Perreault stick handling. Cross ice pass. Little shot. Stop. Rebound. They score. Andrew Ladd with the putback. And the Jets get a power play goal. It's 2-1. Winnipeg.
Andrew Ladd scoring earlier this year against the Chicago Blackhawks. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzie. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Still to come on the show today we're going to have the interview where I conducted with Matthew Schneider, special assistant to NHLPA executive director Donald Fehr, Ben Raby, Washington Capitals pre- and post-game show host on the Capitals Radio Network. You can also read his work in WashingtonPost.com, and Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times, which leads us into our discussion about the Chicago Blackhawks, the Jets' opponent, tomorrow afternoon. The second half of a back-to-back, of course. Richie says no more excuses, not allowed to mention that anymore. I don't blame him at all in that case. The Jets look up in the Central Division standings, and who is right above them? It's the Blackhawks. 30 points, the Jets 26 points. They played the same number of games. So, really, as I've said from the start of the show, a really key game for the Jets against the Blackhawks tomorrow afternoon, a Central Division matchup where the Jets have struggled in division so far this year, especially losing those two games to Colorado. You'd like to get back on track in the division by beating the Blackhawks tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, and we talked about this afternoon, the Jets having to shut down Ovechkin and Backstrom and Oshie and Kuznetsov and Burakovsky, and then you got Patrick Kane coming up on Sunday, and Patrick Kane just keeps getting points. It's unbelievable how he's playing right now. He's really carried over how he played in the Stanley Cup playoffs and really how he's played for the last 6 or 7 years. He's one of the top players in the NHL. We know that. But
is he the best player in the game right now, in your mind?
I think Sagan's the best player, but Kane's close.
I think Jamie Benn's in that conversation too.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I think there's I think this year
pick a Central Division team and they have a player that's in the conversation.
I think it's interesting too, because for years it's been all about Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin, and Crosby's fallen off a little bit, and Benn and Sagan, obviously younger, have come on, and you know, and you've got other players in that conversation as well. Artemi Panarin, not in the conversation for best player, but I mean, he is a legitimate Calder candidate right now.
Oh, for sure.
And he's fit in greatly on that second line for the Chicago Blackhawks. And there's been some growing pains for the Chicago Blackhawks team with all of the movement, you know, Oduya and Sharp and all these players, Timonen, Vermette, the veterans they picked up at the lineup and at the end of the season, I should say, pardon me. And you know, they've had to bring in some younger players. You know, we talked about it last time the Blackhawks were in town. Viktor Tikhonov, you know, Marco Dano came over from Columbus, and he hasn't quite worked out. But younger players, it's a different makeup. The defense, Rich, is different. Even though there's the familiar faces there, we know that the Chicago Blackhawks, Stan Bowman, would probably like to get another top four defenseman. We've heard Bob McKenzie and Darren Draeger talk about it. Trevor Daley, who came over from Dallas, he hasn't quite fit in into their top four, right? But
yes,
it's still a very dangerous team. And it's not as deep on the third and fourth lines. That's where I think they've lost a little bit of depth. But, you know, Teuvo Taravainen, he's still a really good young player who didn't get a lot of time in the lineup last year, but he's still a really good player. So it's a very dangerous team. So the Jets are going to have to be sharp against the Hawks. I think that's pretty obvious to say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a fair assessment. They're not as good as they were before. Like, and we said it last time they came through town, and it was confirmed. You know, it was confirmed. Mark Lazarus came on our show at Chicago Sun-Times and said this team's not as good as it was before. I mean, let's be clear. And that's the case. It doesn't mean that they're not dangerous. It doesn't mean that they're not talented. Last time the Jets played against Chicago, there was no Duncan Keith.
So that only makes a bit of a difference.
It's a huge difference, obviously, Drew. Right. So yeah. And right now, as of last game, If you're playing against this squad, you're playing against a team that's, as you said, top heavy. You know, they've spread it around a little bit. They've changed their lines up throughout the year. But when you're playing against this line, you're playing against the Patrick Kane line and the Jonathan Toews line and Marian Hossa.
Yeah.
And as he mentions, Taravainen. But you talk about Trevor Daley, and he hasn't been able to solidify the top four. So you're playing with Roosevelt. Yeah, he's fine in six and not a great skater and a bigger guy, but guys like Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who have good offensive skills, you know, you're lining up a couple right side guys together, and you're not where you want to be. You want to have a better top four. So their defense not as good. Their forwards, you know, depth is an issue. But overall, I think, you know, you talk about Panarin. He's been excellent, very skilled, able to create for himself, create for others. That's it. Very impressive skill. I think he is 100% in the Calder conversation. And you have this team, Drew, that doesn't, even last year, I mean, they turned up their game in the playoffs and they weren't dominant in the regular season. They came through, the last time they came through town, they controlled the pucks. They controlled the puck. They put a lot of shots on net.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't a ton of dangerous shots, but they did control the puck and put a lot of shots on net. So that means that they're consistent in the way that they play. Now, they'll likely have more shots in dangerous areas. Consistent in the way they play, that they have the puck on their stick all the time. And that was done with Svedberg in the place of Duncan Keith. Huge difference.
Sure.
So the Jets have to be able to deal with that. And the matchups defensively on the road are a problem, right? That's the thing. You know, who matches up? We talk about it for today's game. Myers and Edstrom, like I said, did a really good job against the Backstrom line and Backstrom-Ovechkin-Oshie line in Washington. That'll be the draw. At home, you get your matchups. You can put who you want. I don't know who you want. Do you want the Buffalo line? Last time, they played the Buffalo line more against the Kuznetsov line than the Trouba and Stewart. But on the road, they're going to, one of Taves or Kane is going to have, because they're playing on separate lines, is going to have their pick. Now, Kuznetsov, we don't talk about him as much, but he's right up there.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying he's Taves or Kane yet, but he's right up there in terms of creating offense. So the Jets need to be able to solidify that second pairing, whoever it may be, to play defense for them.
And coming in into a Chicago building that we always know is loud at United Center, and coming into the second game of a back-to-back, even though you had a lot of success last year in Chicago winning three games, mm-hmm. you're going to be most likely seeing Michael Hutchinson in net. I would be surprised if Connor Hellebuyck plays both games here this weekend.
You say you would be surprised?
I would.
Yes, yeah. I agree with you. And worth pointing out, first of all, it was worth pointing out, one, that Paul Maurice hasn't actually confirmed the goaltender for today, but everybody in the arena would be stunned if it's not Connor Hellebuyck.
And Hutchinson plays well in Chicago,
and
right?
Hutchinson has had good success in Chicago against the Blackhawks. Exactly right.
And it's also that since Paul Maurice has been here, they've always used a different goalie in the back-to-back situation. They've never used the same goalie back-to-back. So I think that's important because that's the precedent. But the point is, you're going into a game where you're going to have to be structured defensively like they were last year. And I think there's some encouraging signs, the way they played against the Minnesota Wild in Minnesota, the way they played on Wednesday against the Toronto Maple Leafs. They played very well, and you could say that the Toronto Maple Leafs don't pose much of a threat, and they only have a few guys that can hurt you. But, hey, they still got the job done against a very weak opponent, right? So, as Richie mentioned, it's going to be very important for Tobias Enstrom and Tyler Myers on the top pair because you're going to face a very good Chicago Blackhawks line, whether it's the Taves line when mm-hmm. they're out there with Hossa mm-hmm. and whoever's up with them.
Well, Hossa actually hasn't been on that line for the most part. He's been playing on the third line, but your point is well taken. I mean,
that's not something that, I mean, if that was last game, that's something that'll be temporary because Taves and Hossa have been together for years now,
right.
Drew. So if that line was together, I didn't watch the last Hawks game, but I would expect Taves and Hossa to be together, and then they've had Panarin, Anisimov, and Kane on the second line.
That's right.
So the point is, if Enstrom and Myers are matched up against that, the first line or the second line, which, as Richie mentioned, Quenville's got the last change in Chicago, his advantage,
right.
And we know that Joel Quenville is a master at matching up lines. It's going to be a tough game, and again, the encouraging signs are the Jets have beat the Blackhawks already once this year. They beat them four times, was it, last year? So, I mean, there's an opportunity here to not only get 4 points, but to beat two of the best teams in the NHL and then set yourself up nicely for a game against Columbus, which you know that'll probably be a pretty easy victory.
Well, I mean, no easy victories in the league, Ezzy, but I know you mean in terms of Columbus, obviously not. I mean, obviously having a poor year. One thing to note, and we talked about Washington's power play in the first segment, Washington is scoring a 25% clip, over 25% clip on the power play. So you take 4 penalties today, you're going to get scored on, likely.
Once, okay? Yeah.
At least?
Yeah.
And Chicago Blackhawks are scoring at a 22.5% clip. So,
and the Blackhawks have typically struggled on the power play over the years, which is
always
even
surprising.
more surprising, right?
But is there something to be said then from, I mean, obviously this is a tremendous challenge for the Winnipeg Jets this weekend. But is there something to be said for you almost get to gear up for these two games and that you know that these are two of the elite teams in the NHL?
I think so.
And you started the year and there was all the chatter about how well you were playing and then you've fallen back and maybe this is an opportunity to make a statement for this weekend?
I just don't buy it because they need to win basically two of every three games.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter who you're playing.
I get it.
You just got to win.
Yeah.
Like, they've put themselves in a hole. I know, you can look all you want about 4 points, this and that.
I'm not even looking at the standings. I'm just saying that you want to prove yourself against the best, and you have an opportunity on a Saturday and a Sunday to prove yourself against the best of the East and, you know, the defending Stanley Cup champions.
I see what Richie's saying. I mean, at the end of the day, they have to get 2 points, whether it's versus Toronto or Columbus. I think more so certain players like a Blake Wheeler, a Jacob Trouba, certain players that I feel get really personally motivated. They have that internal motivation. I think certain players get up to play other teams' best players or the best players in the league. Mm-hmm. I think that's more so it. But I think the Jets approach, the coaching staff, the players, everybody approaches the game similarly. They want to execute the same way. But I know what you're saying, Drew. I mean, I think you still know, you look at the schedule and you see Chicago Blackhawks, Washington Capitals back-to-back. Hey, that might be the Stanley Cup final right there, right? So you know those are two top teams in the league. And I think there is something to be said for, you know, proving something to themselves maybe. But I still think Rich makes a good point in that they need to win, and they know that whoever, it doesn't matter if they're playing, you know, the Soviet Red Army, they know they have to get 2 points and get back into a playoff spot.
I completely agree with Richard's point about they have to win the games. But, I mean, you can't tell me that as a player that, you know, you get the same motivation on a Tuesday against Columbus as you would a Saturday and Sunday against Washington and Chicago. Because we've seen players come out with more energy when the games have more at stake than they do when it's just another regular season game in the middle of a slog.
But having said that, they beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-1, right? And really seemed to get up for that game. But no, it's a good point. And it's certainly going to be entertaining as a spectator, because this is a crucial part of the season. We've talked about that. Two games against the Blackhawks coming up. And then after that, after Columbus and Chicago next weekend, you've got St. Louis and New York coming into town. That's not an easy couple of games at home.
It's not.
So it's not going to get easier. So if you're the Jets, as Richie mentioned, you know you've got to get points here. So you look at what logo is on the jersey of the team you're playing at, playing against, pardon me, and you strategize differently for certain teams. St. Louis is a heavier team. The Rangers are a quicker team.
That's right.
But at the end of the day, you got to make sure you have more goals than the opponent. So you got to make sure you get 2 points in all of these games, regardless if it's the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference or the best team or whatever.
Well, you're right. And Drew, you mentioned, you know, you not getting up for the games the same way. Well, do you think Toronto gets up for the Winnipeg game on a Wednesday night in December?
No.
Or November, was it?
It was December.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they do.
So it goes both ways.
Of course. It certainly does go both ways. I'm not saying it's a unique phenomenon for one team and not the other. I'm just saying from the Jets, you have to think that this is a bit of a bellwether test this weekend. We'll find out how they do, of course, is starting this afternoon against the Capitals and then tomorrow afternoon against the Blackhawks. Let's head to break. When we come back, the Edmonton Oilers suck again. We're going to act surprised. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Still to come on the show in about 10 minutes' time, our interview with Matthew Schneider of the NHLPA, Ben Raby, Capitals pre- and post-game show host, and Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times as we get you set for a busy weekend with the Winnipeg Jets. This segment of the show brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, to be more precise, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Some more upheaval with regards to the Edmonton Oilers earlier this week. They lost to the Toronto Maple Leafs, a listless effort. Here's head coach Todd McLellan. Quote, "When I look at this trip as a whole, their road trip, which they finished 1-3-1 on, we had some key people really underperform on the trip. Significant minus numbers, not hitting the score sheet. It can't always be the top line that provides that. We're not where we need to be," Todd McLellan said post-game. "We've got work to do as a team, work to do as an organization to get bigger, stronger, harder, and physically win more battles than we lose." More or less, he was calling out both Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle after the loss to the Maple Leafs. You could read between the lines and see that's who he was talking about, given their performance on the road trip. I mean, are you surprised? I mean, we know McDavid's out of the lineup. Are you surprised that...
And Yakupov,
that's true. Yakupov out of the lineup as well after that freak incident in Carolina. Are you surprised that the Edmonton
Oilers... Yeah,
they
still have 7 first overall picks in the lineup.
Yeah. Are you surprised that they've reverted to being the same team we've seen for the last, you know, 5 years without McDavid in the lineup?
Why would we? It's the same team it's been for the past few years.
So is it time to make a trade then?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't trade Nugent Hopkins. I know that's been bandied about. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be something that I would do. He's too good. He's young. He's talented. He makes players better around him. I mean, if you're going to trade Jordan Eberle, I like Jordan Eberle. I can see them wanting to trade Jordan Eberle more so than Nugent Hopkins. But you need to, you know, you can keep drafting these forwards, and that's fine. The smaller skilled forwards, Taylor Hall notwithstanding. But at some point, you have to change. You have to identify defense as a need and address it.
They probably thought they did.
How?
Well, I mean, if you asked and they thought that Andre Sequeira was a good addition, they probably thought Griffin Reinhardt, who they traded for, was a good addition.
I disagree with the decision by the management if that's what they thought was going to be the fix. But you might be right, Drew, in terms of the rationale there. Well, again, that would show that their plan is flawed.
Sure, maybe they're poor evaluators of talent in that case. Well. I mean, which is, you know, hard to believe with, you know, Peter Chiarelli, pretty a sharp guy.
People fall in love with you know, a lot of managers are scared, I think more so than in the past, to trade talent, worried that it'll come back and bite them mm-hmm. in the behind. And I think you saw guys with a little, you know, Glenn Sather just moved up in New York and probably in Palm Springs now. He was always willing to make the bold deal.
Sure.
Arnaud Guérin, you know? Guérin, Anson Carter.
Yeah.
Like, it was always, okay, I need... Sure, that was budgetary restrictions there, but even in New York, I didn't like the Keith Yandel deal, but he made the Keith Yandel deal. He made the St. Louis deal. Yeah, bold decisions and willing to live with the consequences. Now, you have to have the security of ownership and things like that, too, and obviously James Dolan and originally, I guess, Pocklington and Edmonton were you know, behind him, right? And the thing was, he... Also, his personality allowed him to make those moves and feel comfortable in his own skin. But a lot of managers, I think, in the past were like that. Not as many now. I mean, how many guys do you see trading? And I know skill's hard to come by, but making the big deal. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff doesn't make the big deal, I don't think, last year. Doesn't come to fruition if Evander Kane doesn't have the incident in the locker room, the alleged incident in the locker room. Hmm. Again, so these are the things, right? You know, Tim Murray is a bull. Give him credit. Tim Murray goes into Buffalo, and he makes a ton of moves. Not many guys are like that.
Jim Neal in Dallas, sure.
Yeah, I'm not Jim Neal, exactly. I'm not saying it's 100% the right way, but it's these guys come in and they don't want to trade the guy who's going to go. They don't want to trade Tyler Seguin, and I understand that. But you see the rationale. So, but at some point you have to address the back end. Obviously, the net minding too. Like, you have to go out and just get an established guy who can eat the big minutes. That is going to cost you something.
And the problem with some of the defensemen that they acquired and. I like Eric Greiba. He's kind of a tough stay-at-home defenseman. He's a third-pair defenseman, okay? Justin Schultz is not a top-pair defenseman, but they use him in a top-pairing role, power play, whatever, right? The Oilers do not have a pure number one or number two defenseman. They have a bunch of kind of good 3-4 defensemen. None of them are particularly offensively talented aside from Justin Schultz, maybe Klefbom, yeah. Who they signed to a 7-year deal. Klefbom's still young, and the jury is still out on him as far as how good he can be, right? Mm-hmm. But you look at the Edmonton Oilers, and I still think they're suffering from first overall itis. Really, I mean, you look at the team, and you know, you look at the names, and Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, who wasn't a first overall pick, obviously, but a really good player. But Hall and Nugent Hopkins... particularly, and throw in Yakupov and McDavid, and you say, these are all first overall picks. These are all good young players. Why aren't the Oilers going out and scoring 5 goals every night and, mm-hmm. and winning a lot of games? But then you look at the surrounding cast around
That's
them,
right.
And it's just not very good.
It's kind of embarrassing. I mean,
it's just not a very good team, Richie. And even though these guys are good, and I don't know if they should trade Eberle or Nugent Hopkins. Well, I certainly don't think they should trade Taylor Hall. I would say, aside from McDavid, he's their best player. But at a certain point, you're going to have to trade from a strength to address a weakness, right?
Yes.
And there's no Chris Pronger. This isn't 2005. You don't have Chris Pronger back there. They're not making a run here. I didn't think they were going to be a playoff team this year. They're last in the Western Conference. So even though they might only be 5 or 6 or whatever points out of a playoff spot, it's a bad team. And the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs shut them out 3-0 proves they're a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, yeah, fair enough. But the thing is that if you... If Connor McDavid doesn't get hurt, are we having this conversation?
Probably not, because he could single-handedly cover up a lot of warts.
I don't think even with Connor McDavid in the lineup, they're a playoff team, Rich.
I would agree with that, Ezzy, But I still believe that they have that defense hole that needs to be addressed. But I just think that we wouldn't be having, like, I don't think an injury to McDavid should prompt, well, we might have to trade Nugent Hopkins. Not that they're necessarily internally thinking that, but it should be, we have a lot of forwards under contract, which we're going to have to pay all these forwards at some point if we're not already paying them big money deals. And we need to address defense as a need, and Darnell Nurse won't be ready in the same time frame as et cetera, et cetera. So
trading more to, you have a lot of assets up front. Yeah, use them properly.
Yeah, McDavid, obviously, is on his cheap deal. He's going to be great value. McDavid, you have Draisaitl.
Also
you
on a
Hall,
cheap deal.
You have Eberle. You have Nugent Hopkins. You have Yakupov. Yeah. That's six guys. Okay? If they all perform close to expectations, you're going to have to pay them all. And hasn't.
Sour cap's not going up to $150 billion.
That's right. And you pay Sakara a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure you have Klebanov on his long-term deal and such. So I mean, these are things eventually you're going to have to make a move. So should a McDavid injury prompt that move? I'm not necessarily saying that. I think it would be reactionary. But big picture, it should have been something they were considering in any event.
As we head to break, let's hear from Jordan Eberle addressing the criticism that he's received about his play so far this season.
I understand that. It's part of the game. It's a business. You know, there's nothing I can control other than going out there and playing my game. I know that, the impact that I can make on this team, and, I want to get back to that. It's that simple.
That's Jordan Eberle discussing his performance with the Edmonton Oilers. As he quickly, go ahead.
Just before we go to break, our boy Steve Warrior in Florida works for the Panthers. Of course, he's tweeting at us. He wanted us to mention we're not giving the Florida Panthers any love. They have won 5 in a row, so shout out. He's listening in Florida. You got to give the Panthers credit, too. Another young team who's been playing well in the Eastern Conference. We don't talk about them a lot, so I know he wanted us to mention Panthers.
You guys will be there in what? Is that February?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be in there. You'll be in South Beach in February for the Illegal Curve road trip.
Yeah, when the Jets are there.
Yeah, when the Jets are going to go check out the Panthers and the Jets later on in February. Let's head to break. When we come back, the interview that we conducted with Matthew Schneider of the NHLPA. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of Illegal Curve here on this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Earlier this week on Thursday, I had the opportunity to sit down with Matthew Schneider of the NHLPA. Matthew is the special assistant to the executive director, Donald Fehr. He has been in that role since 2011, of course, a former Stanley Cup winner with the Montreal Canadiens. He's represented the United States in international hockey, both starting with the 1996 World Cup of Hockey. For your listening enjoyment, here's the interview I conducted earlier this week with Matthew Schneider of the National Hockey League Players Association. We're pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Matthew Schneider. Matthew is the special assistant to the executive director of the National Hockey League's Players Association. That gentleman, of course, is Donald Fehr. Matthew, appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us here on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into sort of the nuts and bolts of the interview about the NHLPA, wanted to ask you about a big event that's coming up in your life. 2 weeks from tonight, you're going to be inducted into the United States Hockey Hall of Fame. That's Thursday, the 17th of December in Boston. How special is that honor going to be for you? You know, a tremendous career in the NHL, a Stanley Cup winner. Where does, getting inducted into the United States Hockey Hall of Fame rank among those accomplishments?
It's so much different from my experience as a player. You're used to doing everything as a team when you're playing, and to have an individual honor is certainly something special. Something like this, I'm extremely grateful. But it'd be real nice to be able to acknowledge so many of the people that were able to help me achieve such a career. And I wish everyone had that opportunity.
Matthew, among the litany of accomplishments in your career is that you are a member of the 1996 World Cup of Hockey team for the United States, the inaugural World Cup of Hockey, of course. And then coming up this summer, 20 years later, there's going to be another World Cup of Hockey. This one has a very unique format with the under-23 team from Canada and the United States. Whose idea was that under-23 team to be one of the entrants in this upcoming World Cup of Hockey?
Well, I can't pinpoint exactly who came up with it, but we've been talking right after the lockout for a long period of time about having this World Cup and what it might look like, and We wanted to separate it from the Olympics and from previous World Cups, in that we wanted to have the eight best teams and have the most NHL representation here. We wanted to make it representative of the NHL and have as many countries represented as possible. That was the beginning stages of Team Europe, and then when we looked at Team Europe, it made it difficult to have that eighth team, and we started to look at possibilities at that point of what a young stars team might look like, and you know, where that age would be appropriate, and that's where we ended up coming up with the under 24, where we felt we could have a team that was as competitive as any team in the tournament, and maybe even be a surprise contender for the finals. So that's really what our thinking was, how we could be representative of the most countries and representative of the NHL and have the greatest tournament that hockey's seen.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Matthew Schneider. Matthew, of course, is the special assistant to the executive director of the National Hockey League's Players Association. Matthew, you know, you mentioned the upcoming Olympics and wanted to ask you about that. How are the discussions coming along with regard to NHL participation? We know that 2018 and 2022 are going to be over in Asia, not typically hockey hotbeds, but we've heard, you know, players want to go. How are the discussions coming along between the Players Association, the IIHF, Jeff, the IOC, and the NHL themselves?
Well, we've only had initial discussions with the IIHF and the NHL and ourselves, but I think it's been fairly clear for a number of years that players want to go, and we're going to try to make that happen for 2018-2022. Obviously, you know, when we're looking at the prospect of growing the game worldwide, you know, China and the Asian market certainly a big part of that discussion, and their hockey has been growing at a very, very, very small pace, but nevertheless growing. And through our involvement with the IIHF, we've been encouraging it over the last few years. But I think we have a real opportunity over the next several years to really make an impact and put hockey on the map in the Asian market.
Matthew Schneider, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matthew, you know, for us on talk radio, concussions and suspensions certainly always a hot topic. Wanted to ask you this sort of, you know, not with specifics of any incident in mind, but as the NHLPA with the, you know, the mandate to advocate for all players, how do you handle the push-pull effect where you're, you know, advocating for both a victim and a perpetrator, for lack of better words, when it comes to an on-ice incident? How is that balance, you know, how difficult is it always to achieve a balance in that instance?
Well, I think, you know, this is one of the great misconceptions of our role, of the NHLPA's role in supplemental discipline. Our role is essentially to make sure that you know, players all receive the same treatment, fair hearing, and it's really not an awful lot more than that. The club general managers, the agents are on the call a lot of times, and the players advocate for themselves. And you know, essentially, we're present, and we're there to make available all of the resources from what's collectively bargained.
Matthew Schneider, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matthew, we're in the midst of a time of labor peace in the NHL, and I'm sure I speak for all hockey fans when I say that it's a welcome change from all the conversations we've had the past number of years regarding the collective bargaining agreement and everything along those lines. Right now, in this, you know, situation, in this time period of labor peace, what's the most important task that the Players Association has to take on during this kind of time period?
Well, I would say honestly that's really evolved, particularly in the last few years. You know, we have a lot of joint committees, health and safety. The World Cup of Hockey is probably the best example of how we're working together. in past years, you know, the PA would have signed off, but the NHL basically executed the entire World Cup. This time we're involved in everything from sales, sponsorship, ticket sales, broadcast rights, top to bottom. We're partners 50-50 with the league. And we have similar committees working. We're working not only with health and safety, but competition committee. We're reviewing possible rule changes every year. So, you know, we have an awful lot going on an ongoing basis, in addition to, I guess, basically enforcing the CBA, making sure that, you know, players receive everything that they're entitled to receive under the CBA, whether it's players getting sent up and down from the minors, players that are traded. There's a whole raft of issues that come up, and you know, the World Cup of Hockey and things like that are exciting and a little more sexy than the traditional labor practices, but they're all extremely valuable.
You mentioned the collective bargaining agreement, Matthew. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Matthew Schneider of the National Hockey League's Players Association. And in the collective bargaining agreement, there is, of course, a clause that allows for offer sheets to restricted free agents who meet certain criteria. Yet it's so rare that we see an offer sheet presented in this day in the NHL. Do you think that is an underutilized aspect of the CBA?
Well, it's difficult for me to say. I've never been in that role as a general manager, so I'd have a tough time answering that. You know, I know the rewards for these offer sheets can be steep, and sometimes really limit what a GM can do. But you know, that's something that's not for me to say, and I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions as a GM.
You and me both, Matthew, of course. That's someone else's job who's got a higher pay grade than yourself or myself. Matthew Schneider, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Matthew, of course, the NHL and the National Hockey League's Players Association, they're invested in maximizing the revenue that the game gets. Of course, more revenue, higher salary cap, better salaries, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the league is locked into their TV deals in both Canada and the United States for the foreseeable future. They're locked in digital rights as well, as we hear that's the, you know, a big revenue stream that's set to take place. You know, to your mind, what's the next biggest stream of revenue for the league that is going to be coming down the pike? Is it, you know, advertising on jerseys, or is there something else maybe under the radar that we don't see right now?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to surprise you with my answer, but you know, I really believe that we have not yet begun to tap the potential of having more kids play our game. You know, we're just starting to see growth in the United States, but when compared to the other four major sports, we really pale in comparison. Even up here in Canada, you know, participation has been on a decline for boys. It stayed at about the same level overall, but that's only because girls hockey has gotten so popular. But in the United States, and don't quote me, these are numbers that I've come across just recently, but I believe youth basketball participation in the U.S. is somewhere around 18 million kids, baseball 16 million, football 3.5, and hockey's at about 1.2. Now, we have 300 million people plus living in the United States. We need to be able to figure out how we can get more kids playing this game, because, you know, obviously we all believe it's the greatest game on earth.
Yeah, we certainly agree that. You know, what role do you see the NHLPA taking in sort of, you know, driving the grassroots of you know, youth hockey, getting it bigger in the United States, as you mentioned?
Well, we're at the early stages, actually, of developing learn-to-play programs across all 30 clubs. I really believe that, you know, if we create programs that parents are going to want to put their kids in, that allow easy access and can drive down the costs, and kids can come in and learn from great coaches, if we create those programs, we're going to get kids to show up.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Matthew Schneider. You know, Matthew, wanted to sort of, as an addendum to the previous question, you know, the NHL, it's the only North American sport that has limited its coverage of the game by giving it to only, you know, one TV provider up here in Canada. It's, of course, the Rogers Sportsnet. In the U.S., it's NBC and NBC Sports Network. Do you think that the NHL may have erred in sort of putting all their eggs in one basket as opposed to the NBA or Major League Baseball or the NFL, who have multiple broadcast partners?
Well, you know, we're not a part of how those deals get negotiated. I'm not sure that we ever will be, but you know, that's again, that, you know, you said it earlier, that's a decision that's over my pay grade. You know, and I think you know, we certainly want to encourage deals that are going to expose the game to as many people as possible and maximize revenues at the same time, but you know, I guess you could make an argument one way or the other, and someone at the NHL obviously did.
Matthew, a couple more questions for you. Appreciate your time joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A lot of talk, unfortunately, this offseason, some players running into some legal trouble, and I'm not going to ask you to comment specifically on those cases, but do you think that the NHL, in conjunction with the NHLPA, should advocate for stronger drug testing, particularly those of recreational drugs?
Well, you know, our job at the Players Association, and I've told everyone this. People ask me what I do here, and there's a wide range of things. But I'd say the most important thing that I do here is to help educate the players, whether it's helping guys to make decisions on rule changes or helping to educate guys on you know, possibly what they should be thinking about doing with their finances, or we offer programs, we offer assistance, making life decisions. Since the lockout, we implemented a rookie orientation program that deals with everything from social media to you know, supplemental discipline, educating players when they're first coming into the league. But you know, it's extremely difficult, I think, you know, to implement more drug testing without the players' buy-in. It's something that we've been talking to the players about for the last season or so, and you know, we have a wide range of opinions, some stronger than others, but in the end, you know, I think the players have been clear that, you know, if a player has an issue, we want to take a rehabilitative approach. We do have programs in place through the SABH, Substance Abuse and Behavioral Program. We offer counseling and doctors. All the players are aware of it. There's extreme confidentiality attached. But we do want to, from our part and from the league's part, we want to do what's best for the players, and we want to help the players have the best careers they can. So if somewhere down the road that means some more enhanced testing, so be it. But we're having that conversation constantly with the league and with the players.
Matthew Schneider is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matthew, I'm going to let you go on this last question. Coming up this Tuesday here in Winnipeg, it's the National Hockey League's Players Association charity fashion show. Winnipeg Jets players are going to be modeling clothes and walking the runway. You know, sort of a two-part question for you. You know, obviously the goal of this great event next Tuesday is to raise money for various charities, one of them being the Winnipeg Jets True North Foundation, but a number of other local charities. So sort of, what was the impetus? How did this charity event sort of get started? And secondly, you know, you've been in plenty of hockey dressing rooms for a long time and a tremendous career, of course. How much is fashion and suit choices noticed and discussed in an NHL dressing room?
Let's see. The first question, you know, it's a long story. I'm sure it'd take a lot longer than we have. But when I was a player in Montreal, there was a gentleman named Jeff Neiman who ran a couple of these fashion shows, and we did it for the Children's Hospital in Montreal. He came to us last year and proposed the idea of doing this with the players. And when we reached out to the players on Winnipeg and Montreal, both were very receptive and excited to take this on. knowing that they'd be able to give some really good money to some of the charities that they've chosen, and in addition to the team charities. So that's in a nutshell how it happened. And as you know, hockey players can be some of the greatest guys on this earth, and to be able to do this in their home communities for the cities they play in, it gives them a real unique opportunity, and they jumped all over it. As far as fashion in the dress room, absolutely. Absolutely. Since I bought my first silk suit back in 1989, I remember there's been a high level of fashion for the most part. You know, I could throw out a couple names, but I don't want to throw them under the bus. Some guys that really didn't pay attention to it.
Some guys who may have clashed more often than looked stylish. And of course, fans here in Winnipeg want to know if any of the Jets players are going to be modeling track suits next Tuesday. But I'll let that one be. That's an inside Winnipeg thing, of course, involving Mr. Evander Kane, who certainly is known for his fashion sense. Matthew Schneider is the executive special assistant to the executive director of the National Hockey League's Players Association. Matthew, greatly appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us, and really appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Matthew Schneider of the NHLPA, Special Assistant to Executive Director Donald Fehr, for joining us on the program and arranging and agreeing to that interview. Hope you enjoyed it. In case you missed it, it'll be available for download on iTunes and, of course, on IllegalCurve.com. We'll also throw it up on TSN1290.ca. And again, the NHLPA asked me to remind you, tickets available for the charity fashion show this coming Tuesday. You can check out tickets at Ticketmaster.ca if you're interested in attending and seeing some Jets players walk the runway in their latest fashion choices. I'm not a fashion guy myself, as you guys know, on a regular basis.
You're in a sock club.
I am in a sock club. I do like socks. If there was a fashion show for socks, I'd be good at that one.
I think we could probably have like a TSN 1290 fashion show. I know the guy to my left here, Richie Pollock, is a very well-dressed man. He could be out there. I certainly wouldn't, because I don't think my Zubaz sweatpants would look too good on the runway. But
you're more the pierogi. You're in the pierogi eating competition. You know, Richie will be the fashion guy. Yeah, I'll be the sock guy.
We got some well-dressed individuals here. You know, Troy Westwood. He's a sharp-dressed man. Even the lawman. He's been known to wear some nice Italian garments.
nothing off the rack for Gary. Only custom-made is my understanding.
Well, it's custom-made. It's everything. All those suits are $2,000 and up.
Yeah, minimum. So the Schneider interview. It's unfortunate in this day and age. You don't really, you can ask some decent questions and not get great answers. But so be it. It seems like that's the way of the world in 2015, maybe 2016. I'll bring something else on, but
right, that's fair.
Fair comment.
I mean, he's kind of dancing around a few of your questions. You know, he's not in the position to comment on it. He can still provide his opinion,
sure,
and say, I'm not in the position of authority and I don't negotiate those deals. But we would like to see, expanded coverage of the game on different media outlets, because we believe it would, provide the viewers with a better product and blah, 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 blah.
I think everything ties into everything else. He talked about the grassroots of hockey and building the game, via the grassroots.
That was kind of weird in that, if that's going to be the case, the grassroots, then how are you going to, are you starting programs to finance that? I mean, if you are, great, tell us about it.
Yeah.
Because the biggest impediment, I assume, to growth of hockey is going to be financial.
For people, the cost of playing hockey is exorbitant.
Here's another check. Give me another check for this much money for this ice time. Give me another check, and you don't know what it is. In places like Anaheim and L.A., for example, sure, they have rinks, but, they're not a lot of rinks, and I'm sure it's a premium.
It's a premium in Winnipeg that's got a million nights.
Right.
Scale. It's all to scale. Winnipeg has got a lot of rinks, but it's got a lot more players. Anaheim and some of the Sunbelt cities have fewer rinks, but they have, still enough players that want to play on those rinks that it's going to cost a lot of money. But, I can't help but think that, a lot of talk like that, and this isn't exclusive to the NHLPA. I think it's exclusive to all, really, right across the board, in terms of everybody talks about the grassroots. For the most part, it's lip service and a little bit of a check here, but are they really doing anything to any of the sports, even though from the owner's perspective, to the same degree?
I mean, you're going to play in these cities long enough in the southern states, you're going to have players come from there, for sure. I think that's going to be the game is growing there.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing more players from the, Austin Matthews from the Phoenix area. A few of the players I saw last night in the college game, from you know, the southern states and different places like that. So, I mean, that will expand, but, I mean, is there a bigger issue in terms of less kids being enrolled and on all the numbers that comes with that? Those are things to examine. You know, the players wanting to go to the Olympics, I mean, that's a good thing for fans, I assume. The PA is actively involved in the World Cup because they get big-time cash from that.
Sure.
No, they don't get cash from the Olympics as of yet, so, yeah. You know.
It'd be interesting if the players ever decide that the Olympics just aren't worth it. Because you know that as soon as the players decided that, if they ever did.
Well, they would control that. The owners don't want them to go, Drew.
I know the owners don't want them to go.
And give the players credit. That's not for money. That's just for the experience.
Right. And so you wonder if you can ever build the, you know, obviously the owners and the Players Association quietly probably hope that someday they build the World Cup of Hockey up enough that they can just avoid the Olympics altogether.
Got to get rid of that 23 team and these merged teams. Another thing I thought was interesting, I didn't like the answer on it, Drew. I mean, he gave some good answers. I didn't like the answer on representing the offender and the victim in a hit or a suspendable offense. You know, the idea that the PA's job is for a fair hearing. A little more insight on that would have been helpful.
Yeah.
Seriously, I mean, you know, when you have the guys running around and, you know, and you're appealing suspensions, not appealing suspensions, what goes into that? You know, and how much is a concussion issue? A player, you know, it's a league issue. You have concussion spars and things like that. But what about players themselves? What about the PA? And what about how they, I know, obviously you want to protect the player's rights. That's what you're asking. Rafi Torres, you want to protect his rights to have a fair hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But you also want to protect the guy he's nailing to the boards with an elbow.
Exactly. Is there ever any question that there's going to be a fair hearing, though?
Well, I mean, if Gary Bettman is it's kind of like the Goodell is the appeals judge for the decision he made, that's not a fair hearing.
But I believe that Gary Bettman is the appeals judge for on any appeal of a suspension in the NHL. It just so happens that it isn't. I mean, it hasn't been botched the way that the NFL has managed to botch it with Roger Goodell making arbitrary rulings based on, you know, faulty science. You know, anytime Gary Bettman, I think it's happened once or twice where he's actually had to uphold a judgment, I believe.
Well, but would the NHLPA be better served by having a heavy-handed approach to concussions and people who are causing concussions because it's their members who are the careers are being jeopardized? I mean,
sure.
You know, I guess the question is, if you have Mike Richards, who's obviously gone through hard times now, but Mike Richards goes through the middle and to me ruins David Booth's career. And I like Mike Richards as a player. I think he was a very good player. Again, hard times now, but very, very good player. Mm-hmm. But he basically ruined David Booth's career with that elbow up the middle. Whose career are you protecting, and whose career...
Is the NHLPA picking up the phone and saying to Brandon Dubinsky, don't cross-check Sidney Crosby in the head. Don't cross, you know, we hear about their brethren, but they only seem to be brethren when it's a contract, when it's a CBA negotiation.
Maybe. Yeah, that might be true, Drew, but I'd like to hear more about it. That's why when you ask the question, I just kind of gives you a 10-word answer, and you're asking the question. That's what you have to do as the interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like a little bit more on that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll conduct another interview, this with Ben Raby, Washington Capitals pre- and post-game.